Well, 11440, real 5.
When you went over the top with the 16th Battalion,
yes,
at Hebbuton in roughly February
1917. Yes, I believe it was the 11th of February.
So, what exactly happened? You had inadequate briefing. Was there
We were just told we were going to attack.
Was there a preliminary bombardment?
There would have been a slight one, but not anything particular that I noticed. But we got out. We got to our wire and found it hadn't been cut at all, so we got to our own wire and across no man's land.
And were you under fire at this stage?
Just occasionally. It was only machine gun fire. You see, the rest of the troops had retired. The Germans, when they retired the Hindenburg line, picked the best spots and put machine guns in there, you see, and they held the advance up.
Was there much shell fire on you as you went over?
No,
so
no.
Just
occasional shell fire, but not a lot, no.
Were you frightened in the machine gun fire?
I was a bit, because I saw one or two chaps keep dropping down, you see, and I kept going. But I got through the German wire.
Was that difficult?
Yes, it was difficult getting through. It was difficult getting through ours as well. But I crossed no man's land and got through this German wire. And dropped into the German frontline trench onto a dead German. And I got out and kept going forward along with the rest of the chaps, you see. One or two kept going down here and there, but few of us kept going. And we got into a German communication trench. And
When you got into the frontline trench, was anybody responsible for clearing out dugouts and things like that?
No. Well, no, I don't think there were any dugouts in the front line.
So you were just pushing on down?
Pushing on, yes, yes.
You went down the communication trench?
I got in the second line, the support line, you see, and got through there and got in the communication trench. And we worked our way down, and Mr. Wilson was still with us. There'd be about 20 of us left by then. And we got so far down the communication trench that then machine guns opened out on us. And Mr. Wilson said we attacked that, there was a little wood in front of us, and they evidently had machine guns in there, you see, and he said, we'll attack that wood. But there was a corporal had joined us from another regiment. We all got mixed up. He often did when he went over the top like that, you see. And he said, we're not going up there, sir. Mr. Wilson said, it's an order. He said, I don't care whether it's an order or not, sir. He says, we can't fight machine guns with bullets. And rifles, and he says, we're not going. He said, if you chaps have any sense, you'll stop here. So I was all for it, so I stopped with him. We got to another bit of German trench, and he said, now look, they'll know where we are. He said, they know where their trench is, so he said, keep your heads down, and you'll stay here till it's dark. And Mr. Wilson objected, but he went on. Now, what happened to him, I don't know. I never saw him again.
He carried on. Now, what had made you decide not to... I mean, he disobeyed an order, in effect.
Yes, well, because these machine guns, they were just going like that, you see. Every man with a gun forward, you'd have been wiped out.
So you were willing to obey a reasonable
order? A reasonable order, but we decided it would have been better, instead of going forward to this wood with these machine guns in, if it had got round it of either side, which the Germans usually did when they made an attack, we might have done it. But the corporal was perfectly right. We'd have been all killed if we'd have gone forward.
And the rest of the men with you?
They said with us, yes.
And how many were there in this little group?
There would be about a dozen of us that were left, you see.
And Wilson, did he actually go off towards the wood, or... Do you not know what happened?
He went off to the left somewhere, where they got another party. I just don't know.
Was he annoyed?
He was annoyed, yes. He kept saying it was an order. We ignored it, you see. I think we were very wise. I wouldn't have been here to fling this tale if I'd done what he wanted us to do. But you see, it was that type of chap. He was... he could defeat the German army all on his own. He was that type of fella, you see. No fear at all. What happened to him, I just don't know. But
you didn't see him again after the attack?
No.
So presumably he was killed, wounded or captured?
As far as I know, yes. Mm.
So you decided to...
To stay there. Well, we stayed there, and they kept machine gunning us, you see, from time to time. But we stayed there all that night. And the corporal said, look, he said, don't stand in the trenches. Get behind the trench and use the parador. Build it up with your trenching tools and make yourself a bit of protection behind the trench. Because he said, they know where that trench is. They'll be lobbing bombs over into it, you see. Which they did from time to time. And
from where?
Well, some party used to come out from the wood and bomb us, you see.
With hand grenades?
With hand grenades, yes.
This is what I want to say.
Stick bombs.
Had you got Mills bombs at that stage?
We didn't have them. We had bombers. They had them, but we didn't have them.
So you still hadn't had any experience?
No, I never handled one. Never seen one. We had a bomber attached to us. One maybe in a platoon, and he was the bomber, and he had a pocket arrangement with his with the bombs in, you see. But he was the only one who knew anything about them. Well, we got behind, and we laid out behind it, you see, all night and all next day.
Still no shell fire,
only machine guns.
Were there any communications between you? And back to Battalion HQ?
No, none at all.
Did you know what the situation was, or where any other units were?
No, we were completely isolated. But we stayed there all that night, and all the next day, and all the following night, and all the next day, and with no food left, with no ammunition. We kept using our rifles with very little ammunition left, and we thought we were completely deserted, because the headquarters were back in Ebbington Village behind us, you know. But we had one chap, we used to call him Lefty, they call him Crowther, I remember. He had like two left legs. We all, you know, some people are like that. But he was a grand chap, he was a lovely fellow, and he would always help anybody to carry the rifles or anything like that, you know. And after 2 days, we saw Lefty coming over with a tin of water and a sandbag over his shoulder. And he ran to us and got down. He said, we heard you firing from time to time, and they decided at headquarters there must be some of you left out here. So he said, I brought you some grub. Lovely fella. He got killed on the Meridge, unfortunately.
You must have been pretty hungry and thirsty.
We were. And he said, now then, the orders are you have to come back. You have to get back to our own line.
So this is right back to the... Not only to the German front line...
Back to our own.
But right across no man's
land. We made that attack and we finished off where we started off.
How did you feel about being asked to retreat? Were you pleased secretly?
Yes, secretly, yes. We were pleased because we couldn't have done anything to go forward, you see. And soon after that, the German machine gunners retired and went back, you see.
Now, while you were there, you know, these... Two or three days, was it? 2 days, anyway.
Yes, 2 days, yes.
While you were there, you said you were firing your rifles.
Yes.
What were you firing at?
Just at the wood. We weren't firing at anything particular, just to let them know we were there, you see.
And was there actually a formal German counterattack at all?
No. They were fighting a rearguard action. All they wanted to do was kill as many of us as they could as we were... You see, I always thought that what we should have done, when the powers that be knew they were going back to the Hindenburg line, well, we never should have been making attacks at their machine guns. They knew what sort of what was going to happen, you see. I think what they should have done should let the Germans get back to the Hindenburg line and then start and do their attacking. But they didn't. All the time, and we must have had a tremendous lot of casualties as they were refining lines. With just... You see, they were better equipped machine guns than we were.
Now, at Heberton, in that attack, about how many people did you lose from your battalion or company, whatever you were aware of?
We didn't lose a lot. We lost some. I know a lad from our own village had just joined us, and his first time in the trenches, he was killed. First day in the line.
What was morale like after the attack?
pretty awful. We thought we'd had all this trouble for nothing.
So what happened next then?
Well, we came back to out on the west of Bairncourt, I think it was. Well, and then we went back again several times, did a tour in the trenches. Would you know? They've been in one or two tours in there, and then
did the trenches move forward to follow the Germans?
We didn't. We're the only time we went back once or twice in there, the same trenches we'd left before. You
so
think.
They'd be the reserve line, then, presumably, would they?
Yes, yes. We would be reserved then. Somebody might have advanced. I don't know. We weren't told, you see. But we didn't stay there long. Then we moved out and we did an 8-day march.
What was that like?
Pretty awful. We slept on the... It was, the weather was a bit better then, though, you see. It was getting a bit better. Usually we had some nissenut somewhere, or sometimes we had a barn or something, and sometimes we slept in the open, just to our blankets and slept in the open.
Now this would be roughly February, March, would it?
March, it would be about March, yes.
1917,
yes.
On a march like this, there's quite an image of British troops singing various songs. Would you sing on a long march?
Oh, I think we did sing a bit, yes, yes.
Do you know what kind of song they sang?
Well, some of it would be a little more about that, I should think, because it was a really odd thing. No, it would be something rude and vague, you know. But
they did sing rude songs then,
didn't they? Oh, yes, they sang rude songs, yes.
Would someone like you join in with that? Or
very likely.
So you were on this march. Do you had any idea where you were going?
No. No, we didn't know. You see, I think that was all together wrong. The private soldier in the British Army didn't know what was going on. And you see, you never saw your generals, I mean, or their heads, they were so far behind the line, they didn't know what was going on either.
What did you think at the time of staff officers, generals, seniors?
Very little. They were much use, because we never saw them, you see. I think they would have done better if they'd come up to see us, just to look at us in the trenches sometimes, to see what conditions were like, you see.
And you thought that at the time?
I thought that at the time, and I still think it, yes. But anyway, we did this 8 mile, this 8 days march, and the last, we went up, we came to near Bethune, a little place called Bouvray, and we were billeted there, and it was lovely and quiet and calm, and after the storm it was, and the ground was dry and lovely, you know, and no sound of shell fire or anything like that, and so I thought, oh, we must be a long way behind the line. On the Sunday morning, I remember, there was a church parade, and this pal of mine, Smithy, we went to this church parade, and then we went for a walk. We said, well, we usually did. We went walking when we got to a new place. We had to explore the country, but you see, it was lovely, open country. So we had a walk, and we'd done maybe a mile and a half, and then a chap in a tent said to us, where are you going? We said, we're just going for a walk down here. He said, this is the front line, mate. I said, front line? He said, yeah. He said, you see them on that road out there, that's La Bassie Road. He said, those are Germans working on there. I said, oh, I hope we've come up here. I said, this is a bit different to the summer. I said, well, don't sell you anything. It's just occasionally. And Bilby was only about 2 miles back. I said, not to sell Bilby. He said, no. It was a sign. He said, I think this must be some arrangement. We don't sell La Bassie, so they don't sell us. I said, oh, wouldn't it be lovely to fight a war like that? And so he said, if you go further down there, you're for it, lad. He said, this is our front line. I thought, oh, how lovely. We're going to be staying here. This is going to be lovely, you see. But we never did any trench duty there. But you could see the German transport going along La Bassie Road, near the La Bassie Canal, you know. I was...
Clearly see them.
Clearly. Oh, yes. Clear as I can see you.
Were they within rifle range?
Yes. Yes, but they didn't bother us, and they didn't bother them, evidently. There's some arrangement between them, you see. They'd let each other alone. Mind you, later on, they tell me it hotted up because some new general took over, got a new division or something, and he said they couldn't have, that wasn't fighting a war, they wanted some, you know, some trouble. But we moved by then.
So you weren't at Bouverie long?
No, just a week or two, you see. And then the Arras battle broke out. I think we were on our way to Belgium, actually. I think that's what we were going up there for.
What, towards Ypres?
Towards Ypres, yes. But we got as far as Bethune, and then we billeted in Bouverie. But I think they must have known that there was something in the offing, you see. So we stayed there, and then one night we were put in lorries and moved. We didn't know where we were going to.
You were in lorries?
In lorries, yes. Right.
That was quite unusual.
It was. We knew there was something, must be, if we get to there so quickly, you see. And we got off these lorries at Mont Saint-Eloi. And then we marched through Rocklin Court, and there was all hell let loose there, you know. There was shelling, and much worse than the storm had been. It was real chaos was there, you see.
So you came under a heavy bombardment?
Heavy bombardment, straight away.
What was that like, to be under a heavy bombardment?
It was pretty awful, because we'd not been under anything like that before.
Could you just sort of give us an idea of what you could see and hear during that sort of experience?
Well, it was night time when we got there, and we couldn't see anything except flashes, very lights going up, and flashes of gunfire, you see. And the next morning, we were in a railway cutting, and I saw there was some... which is evidently where part of the attack had begun, and this was what had been occupied by the Germans up to then, you see. And we took over some trenches which had been the German trenches, and then we were told we were going to make an attack on the village in front of us. Now, the naval division were working in that area, and they'd captured so much of Vimy Ridge, you see. And I think the previous day they'd got part of Gavrel village, which was a foot of the ridge. And our job was to consolidate and retake the rest of the village, you see, which we did.
Did you get any better briefing this time than you had for the...
No, we were to try and capture the rest of this village and take over on the naval division. And I can still see those chaps, I think they were Drake Battalion, many amount of lead dead and some wounded, you know. We'd never been anything like that before. We thought it was bad enough on the sun, but it was quiet, it was peaceful compared with this. It was all hell let loose all the time. There were machine gunning and rifle fire and grenades going off and heavy bombardment and anyway.
What actually happened? Do you remember the date of your attack at Gavrel?
Oh, I put it down somewhere. I think it was April. Anyway, we occupied the village. We got the rest of
what
the
what do you remember of your part in the attack, if you see what I mean? Do you still remember what happened to you, if you could tell us?
I went with a party down a road led from Arras to Way Road, I think it was, right down the village. And they were bombing it and shelling it and machine gunning it all the time. But I got into some, what had been German trenches, really, round the village. And I was a battalion runner then, you see, by that time. And we occupied, I was with the company in the support line behind the village. And we had a trench in front of the village, which had been the German trench, which we occupied and strengthened it up and built it up, you see. But they were still shelling the village pretty badly. And I don't know much about what happened there. We held the line for a few days, maybe a week or so, and then we got relieved.
So that attack isn't clear in your mind?
It isn't clear, no. Not that attack, no.
What would you do when there was a lot of shell fire around you? I mean,
there was nothing you could do, really, except keep down in the trench if you possibly could, you see. You get down and you were hoping that it wouldn't be, well, you could hear them dropping sort of all around you, but hoping it wouldn't be your turn to get one.
So you just got as low as you could?
You got as low as you could. That's the only thing you could do, you see.
Was your religion any help to you at a time like that?
Well, I thought it was. I thought it was. I thought I would be protected. I was, as it turned out. I tried to believe that I might come through it, you see. Yes, well, we'd been there some time, and there was some German machine guns were causing a bit of trouble just out in front of our line somewhere, and this officer wanted to find out where exactly it was so he could get our heavy guns onto it, you see. And so, usually, if an officer went on patrol, you took a runner with him, somebody, and usually a runner. And he asked me, he said, I want you to come with me. I was the colonel's runner, really. He earmarked me for himself because I'd taken parties in and out of the line and hadn't got lost like some of the chap runners had done, you see. So he said I was to be his runner. But however, they lent me for, this officer told me, I think they call him Shakespeare. I'm not quite sure, but I think it was Shakespeare they called him. And he said, we're going to find out where that machine gun is, if we can. And we got out under this road, in front of our, we got through our way, you see, and into no man's land. And then he suddenly said, oh, he said, I shouldn't have this with me, map. He said, you take care of this, will you, till I come back, because he said, we found the Germans to get hold of one of our maps, you see. And so he said, so stay where you are. He says, I'm going a little bit further, see if I can find out exactly where these machine guns are, and I'll pick it up as I come back. He never came back. And I don't know what happened to him. But I thought, oh, I should have to hand this into headquarters and get back. And then I thought, no, I shan't be long before I'm going on leave. I'll keep it. It'll be a lovely souvenir for me, will this? I should have got into trouble if they'd known, but they didn't know. And so I kept it.
And you've still got it now?
Still got it home now, yes. And so when I brought it, I left it at home. I said, and I marked on it all the places we'd been to up to then, you see, so that Mother could, Father could see where we'd been operating, you see. And I said, when you see on the news and they talk about these places, you know that I've been there, you see. So.
Now, I want to talk a bit about you being a runner. How had you first been picked as a runner, as opposed to the colonel's runner? Why had they picked you?
I just don't know. I don't know why I was picked. There were six of us, and we were issued with a red sort of band over our arm, so that you knew you weren't one of the...
The lower arm.
Just on the wrist, yes, a red band, so that you knew... Because... you may be wandering about in places where people thought you had no business to be there, you see. So you weren't one of the ordinary mortals. You were allowed to move about, you see. And so... But very often, went on a message. A runner had been sent on a message. He hadn't got there somehow, and you were sent after to deliver this message. And you found the poor lad laid dead somewhere, you see. It very often did that sort of thing happened.
Now, were you taken out of your company, C Company, at this time?
Yes, and put to headquarters.
So you were now in headquarters?
I was now in headquarters, yes.
And what exactly was your duty as a runner? What were the various parts of the job of a runner?
Well, you had to keep in contact with all of the companies, you see. There was some, perhaps one company in front of the village, and there was a communication trench up either side. We didn't go through the village because they shelled that from time to time. But you had a communication trench. We had to keep improving it as we could, you see, during the night. And your job was to, you perhaps had the message to take to I think C Company was all in the front line at that time, to C Company, the commander of C Company, about something. We never knew what the message was. It was...
Was it sealed? Or
sealed, yes. Yes.
In an envelope?
In an envelope, yes.
And how would you carry it? Just...
Just in your hand, yeah.
You didn't have a satchel or...
No.
You put it in your pocket?
You put it in your pocket,
yes.
You did put it in your pocket? Put it in your pocket, yes. And you took this message and delivered it.
Would you actually, they called you a runner, would you actually run? I know it's a silly
no,
question.
You never, well, not unless, some places you ran because you knew you were under, rifle fire or machine gun fire or something, you see. But mostly you were, well, you knew, you found out where the safe places were and where the awkward places were. And sometimes you had to take a message back to brigade headquarters, which were further over, well, this is on Vimy I'm talking about, Vimy Ridge, over the brow of the ridge, you see, they were well back. And sometimes you had to take a message there, or sometimes you had to get in contact with the commanding officer of the battalion who were on your right flank or your left flank. Signallers, and they had the signal wire, but very often the wire was broken, you see, with the shell fire and that kind of thing. So very often it was out of order, and if they couldn't get through, if they put a wire through, if they couldn't get through a wire, then a runner had to take that message, whatever it was.
And that was quite common at Vimy because of the shelling you just talked about.
The wire was very often out.
What would you do when you got a message? So you'd walk, usually,
yes,
to where it was.
To where
what
it was.
What would you do when you got there? Would you have it handed to the person concerned?
Yes, you had to find the person concerned.
So if you had a message for the colonel of the neighbouring regiment,
you had to find him.
You gave it to him, not to his adjutant.
No. And I was once sent on a message where they called it, the brigadier was called English, I remember. And I was taking the message to brigade headquarters over the top of Vimy Ridge. And I went on the left hand side. You didn't walk up that road because they shelled it a lot. But I was walking on the left-hand side. I should have been in the trench, the communication trench, but I wasn't. I wanted to get there quick. You see, and I was walking on the side of the trench, and I saw this officer approaching. So I got my head down and went on, and he shouted, "Runner!" Because I was running. I turned down and saluted him. He said, "Oh, you don't know I'm an officer, do you?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to be at headquarters with a message for the brigadier." He says, "Well, give it to me." I said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, I'm the brigadier." I said, "Yes, sir. My instructions are to take it to brigade headquarters, and that's where I'm going to take it." He said, "This is an order." I said, "I don't care, sir. My instructions are to take it to brigade headquarters, and that's where I'm taking it." Oh, are you? He was real nasty about it, you see. So when I took my message to brigade headquarters, when I got back, the colonel wants to see you. So he had me in. He says, "The brigadier's complained about you." I said, "Why, sir?" He said, "Because you wouldn't give him the message." I said, "No, sir." I said, "Mine's so supposed to take it to brigade headquarters." I'm sorry, I took it. He says, "You did perfectly right." He said, "He was in the wrong. But it's complained about your uniform." He said, "Yes." He said, "You weren't properly dressed." I said, "Well, I didn't have me haversack and all that kind of thing. Runners, we usually had a bandolier of ammunition, a gas mask, and our rifle, in case anything happened, you see." He said, "In future, you've got to be properly dressed at all times," the colonel said. So we were told, there was a corporal in charge of him, and he told the corporal. So the corporal says, "Well, you'll have to wear your full uniform when you go out again." We said, "It's a bit awkward when you're creeping down awkward places in full uniform, and it doesn't matter, it's an order." And the colonel hadn't been to the front line by then. He hadn't seen this front line company. And the communication trench on the right-hand side was pretty bad. It was shallow in places, but the left-hand side would improve it a lot. It was lovely up the left-hand side of the village. So I said to the corporal, "If ever the colonel wants to go to the front line, will you let me take him?" He said, "Yes. Yes, if you want to." I said, "All right." A couple of days later, he said, "He'd like to go and have a look at our sea company." And he wanted, all the corporal said to me. I went with him. So, and he was a really hefty bloke, was this. He'd been a sergeant major in a Lincoln pre-war soldier, like. He'd been a regiment sergeant major, I think, you know. He's a real military man.
What was his name?
Croydon.
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 Croydon. Yes, a big hefty fellow he was, and fairly broad as well, you see.